You should always roll all retirement plans to an IRA when you leave the company. Anytime you leave where you are, take your retirement with you. Don't take it home. Take it with you, though. There's a difference. What we're going to do is we're going to make it a direct transfer. Do not bring the money home. Now, a direct transfer is that it's currently sitting here in a 401k under this coat. And what we're going to do is we're going to go over here and we're going to open up another coat called an IRA. And then we're going to go, come here, boy. And it's going to come straight over here and get back in the other coat before it gets cold. All right, that's a direct transfer. It's going to jump from the 401k to the IRA. And the way you do that is you simply fill out a form called a direct transfer form. How novel is that? And we fill that out, and the mutual fund company then transfers the money from that mutual fund to the mutual fund that you select over here. There's no withholding needed. There's nothing taken out for taxes, and you have no taxes due. And the reason you take your 401k money with you when you leave is over here, I've got 8,000 mutual funds to choose from. In my 401k, I probably have 10 or 12, right? Say right. So I have more choices over here. The other thing is I got more control because it's not stuck in a company I don't work for anymore. I don't have to deal with their HR department or anything else to get my money. It's over here. I'm getting the statement at the house. It's totally under my control. I can watch what's going on. I can move it if I want to move it and those kinds of things. Now, if you make the mistake, instead of taking it as a direct transfer, and you try to bring that money home, and then you go, oh, I should have put it in there, you're going to find they held 20% out. And so if you got $100,000 in there, they're going to send you a check for $80,000. But you got 60 days to put $100,000 in here. You only got $80,000. I got a $20,000 problem. I just set myself up to have all kinds of penalties and taxes on that $20,000 that was withheld because you took it home before you put it in there. Don't do that. It's a direct transfer rollover. It goes directly from your 401k into an IRA, and you keep control of your money that way. Now, when should I do a Roth IRA in my rollover? If I take my money out of my 401k and I move it over here to an IRA, I can, with a couple of steps, make that a Roth IRA rather than a regular IRA. Well, there's all kinds of problems if you do that, so let's think about when you would do that. Start with, when you do that, you understand you're going to pay taxes because that's not taxed and this is taxed. And so if I move $100,000 over here to a Roth IRA, I've got a $25,000 tax bill coming. And if I cash out $25,000 out of this and only put $75,000 in here to pay the tax bill, well, I didn't gain any ground by going to tax-free then because I just blew off $25,000. So the only way you would ever do a rollover to a Roth is if you can pay the taxes that are created out of your pocket, which in a sense made you invest another $25,000, didn't it? In the way the math works. And so, yes, you do need to do rollovers to a Roth, but only under these circumstances. Number one, are you going to have $700,000 at retirement in tax plans, tax-favored plans? If you are, your bracket is going to be the top bracket as you start pulling the money out. And so you do want the free part of this. And most of you in here, if you do the stuff I teach, easily will hit that $700,000 mark. The second thing is you only do the rollover to the Roth is if you can pay those taxes, like we said just a minute ago, out of your pocket. You don't want to cash out the nest egg to pay the taxes. Only roll it if you can pay the taxes out of pocket. And, of course, you got to understand that these taxes are going to be due and not just be waking up in the middle of the night going, what in the world did Ramsey say? Now, let's look for a second at retirement loans. Never, never borrow against your 401k. How many of you know that your 401k will let you borrow against it? Raise your hand if you know that. Okay, good. Don't do it. Lots of magazine articles and these cheesy little money magazine type things give you bad advice on this. They say, oh, it's cheap money. I mean, you got a credit card at 18%. If I borrow against my 401k, I'm doing that at like 5 or 6 or 7%. And besides that, I'm paying myself the interest. And that's how these articles tell you to do it. Well, all of that's true. It is 5 or 6 or 7%, and you are paying yourself the interest. But what these idiots didn't take into consideration was that when you start, the amount that you loan yourself is unplugged from the investment. So instead of making 12 or 14 or 15% on a decent growth stock mutual fund, you're making 5 or 6% from yourself. Well, that's dumb thing number one. That's why you never borrow on a 401k. But the biggest reason is this. When you leave your company, and you will leave your company, You will leave your company to get a better job because they lay you off or because you die. You will leave your company. When you leave your company, the 401k loan is due in full right then. If you do not pay that loan off within 60 days, and this is a really good time to be paying a loan off when you're dead or broke because you got laid off. If you don't pay the loan off within 60 days, that's considered by the IRS an early withdrawal, and they're going to hit you with your tax rate of about 40% or 30%, and they're going to hit you with another 10% in penalties. So about half of that loan is going to be a big tax bill right in the middle of your layoff or right after your husband dies or whatever. That's what you're going to be facing if it was your husband's 401k. So these are the kinds of the reasons you do not do this. I run into more messes with this, and everybody thinks it's a good way to get a debt consolidation loan is to borrow it from yourself. Dumb idea. You unplug a good investment, and you set yourself up for a huge tax bill. And it just seems that that's how that stuff always works. It all comes in bad times. If you're a federal government employee or you're in the military, you have the thrift plan, the federal thrift plan available to you. There are several types of things you can put money in, several different letters they have. There are three of them that I like. My suggestion is, if you have the thrift plan available to you, that you put 60% in the C fund. The C fund is a common stock fund. It works about like an S&P index fund, a growth stock mutual fund, from the lesson of mice and mutual funds. So this is a good, solid mutual fund. It's averaging between 8 and 12%, somewhere in there. A good idea. I recommend that you put 20% in the S fund. The S fund is small companies, aggressive growth stock mutual fund, type of a emerging markets type of a fund. Again, this thing has averaged right around 9% lately. The I fund, I put 20% in. The I is the international fund, and as you know from the lesson of mice and mutual funds, if it says international, the companies that they're buying stock in would be overseas or international. You remember that part of the lesson? Say yes.
Yes.
Good. Now, so we've got 60, 20, 20. The other three are the F fund and the G fund, which are fixed in government bonds and bad, lousy rates of return. They're like money market rates of return. Those are the two very conservative ones, and it's like putting your IRA in a CD. It's a dumb idea. You want to get more on your money than that. And then they've come out with the new L plans, and that stands for life phase, and that means that as you are at different phases of your life, they move the money around the way they think it should be. And so I think L stands for lousy. So you decide what's going to happen with your money. You control it. And you watch the returns. If they change, you may want to change my suggested mix here. This mix may not be good forever. But for right now, this is how I feel about it. And if I were working for the federal government, that's how I would distribute my thrift plan. Now, our suggestion is baby step one is $1,000 in the bank. Baby step two is the debt snowball. Baby step three is a fully funded emergency fund. Then we get to baby step four, and baby step four is 15% of your income going into retirement under all these different things we've been talking about. So it's kind of dizzy right now. Are you dizzy? I know this stuff, and teaching it, I'm a little dizzy right now. It's just like I feel like I'm chasing my tail up here. There's enough numbers and letters and stuff. It's a barrel of fish hooks. So let's just boil this thing down a little bit and figure out what we're going to do very, very, very carefully. If you make $100,000 a year, what's 15% of your income?
$15,000.
And so half of that, if I made $50,000 a year, my 15% would be $7,500. Does that sound right? So kind of get that types of figures in your head with your whole household income. And I want to put 15% in. Now, the first place I would put 15% is in my 401k at my company or my 403b at my company if there's a match up to the match. How many of you have a match at your work? Good. The rest of you, forget I said that. Well, you're going to just move on to step two in a minute. But those of you that had a match, raise your hand again. Yell out to me what some of the matches are. 3%, 6%, 4%, 6%. There you go. 4.5. Okay. I'm hearing lots of threes, fours, fives, sixes, that kind of thing. Lots and lots of companies. By the way, about 75%, 76% of the companies do some kind of a match. The most popular match is about 3%. That's a pretty standard thing. That's what we do at our company right now. We do a 3% match with people in our 401k. So a 3% match would work like this then. The first 3% that you put in, if you put in $1,000 into the 401k, your company adds $1,000 before anything happens. That's a good rate of return. You just made 100% on your money before we started. That works, doesn't it? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, so you always take the match. So if you've got a 3% match, let's say you make $100,000 a year, so this is real simple, 3% would be $3,000. But we're trying to get to 15, right? But we're certainly going to do that 3 because that 3 is really good with 100% rate of return. Then we're going to move to the next step. And the next step is you do the Roth IRA. Now, without the phone ringing back there and the government changing the laws, currently you can do a Roth IRA, married filing jointly, if you make over $155,000 a year. Right in that range, okay? So if you make under that, then you're qualified for a Roth IRA. If you make under $155,000 a year, married filing jointly. So you would do a Roth IRA in our example because this is $100,000 household income. Now, we said in our example in the year 2008 that $5,000 you can do in a Roth IRA, right? Okay, and we're not going to let the phone ring right now. We're just going to go with that as our example. So if this is a couple and they're married, they could do 5 each, couldn't they? Say yes.
Yes.
That would be 10, wouldn't it? Yes. So I've already put in how much?
3
in the 401k. Now I'm at 10. That's 13. I've still not gotten up to baby step 4, which is 15% of my income. You see how I'm doing this? I'm working my way up, wisdom upon wisdom upon wisdom. So now I've got match and I got tax-free. Well, all you got left now is go back to your 401k and put in another $2,000. So you got $3,000 going in matched, and you got $2,000 non-matched, and then you got your Roths working. That got me to 15%. If you were the $50,000 income, we'd be dealing with $7,500 as our target, and we at 3% would be $1,500. Means I need to do 6,000, right? So I could do 10 in Roths, but we're not doing 20%. We're only doing 15%. So 7,500 is the goal. I'm going to do 1,500 matching at my company. I'm going to do 6 in Roths, and I'm going to stop. That's all I'm going to do for right now. We'll come back later and do more in Roths, come back later and do more in 401ks. But you stop there. So we're going to do matching, Roths, non-matching, until we get to 15%. Wherever along there you get to 15% of your household income, stop. Don't save 28% of your income, because we got some other stuff to do with this in these other baby steps for a little while. When we get some stuff cleaned up, we'll come back and load up everything. So for now, though, I'm going to give you a good, healthy start with some muscle at 15%. Everybody understand that? Say yes.
Yes.
Good. Now, how many of you in here are 27 years old or younger? Raise your hand. Good. So let's use you guys as an example. Let's say we had a 27-year-old couple in here, and it took them 3 years of blood, sweat, and tears, beans, and rice to go, baby step one is $1,000, baby step two is they paid off all their debts. That took them 2.5 years. And then baby step three is it took them another little 6 months to finish off baby step three, and they got a fully funded emergency fund. So you're 27 years old in here, and by the time you get through baby step one, two, and three, you're 30. You with me on that? See where I'm going? Let's look at the Great American Dream for just a second. Let's take that 30-year-old couple that is now free of debt except their home, and they partially fund a Roth IRA at $500 a month. They partially fund a Roth IRA at $500 a month. That's $6,000 a year. We've already established that couple could do $10,000. And we're only going to do six. If they put it in there and they made 12% rate of return in their mutual funds, then what would that be? $500 a month from age 30 to age 70 is $5.8 million. Tax
free.
That's $6 million. I mean, wow. What if I'm half wrong? You're still going to be okay. The point is, this stuff works over time when you start laying it out. You get all caught up in all these numbers and stuff before you know it, but there's a reality to this, and it's called my dignity has changed. There's a reality to this that says my family tree has changed. There's a reality to this stuff that matters. That's the Great American Dream. Most people are living the Great American Nightmare, paycheck to paycheck. 70% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck, the Wall Street Journal says. I don't want to live that way. Number one cause of divorce in North America, money fights and money problems. You got a few less money fights if you got $6 million. Just fighting over where we're going on vacation next. This is not a problem, right? It changes the whole situation, doesn't it? That same couple, let's say they put 15% of their income into a 401k without a match. Now, they're an average couple. Average in North America as of this moment, according to the Census Bureau, the average household income is $40,000. If you make $40,000 a year and you save 15%, 15% of $40,000 is $6,000. $6,000 is $500 a month. Same numbers we used a minute ago. So they put $500 a month into just their 401k with no match in decent growth stock mutual funds that average just what the market averaged. They don't do any better. I mean, they're below average in their fund picking. And they still end up with $5.8 million in the 401k. How fun would that be? How wild would that be? I mean, what if they did both? They'd have like $12 million. You know what you can do if you have $12 million? Anything you want. I mean, think about it. Do you understand that the interest is like $1 million a year? It's like $86,000 a month, $83,000 a month. This is hard to fathom. I mean, it takes about 3 months to buy everything you ever wanted. It takes about 4 more months to ruin your grown kid's life. And now we're just bored. I mean, this is hard to fathom emotionally, isn't it? It's hard to take in and believe. So wait, what if I'm way wrong? I mean, let's just say that these losers making $40,000 a year. Well, Dave, I don't like you saying that. Well, I mean, think about the numbers I just ran. I said from age 30 to age 70, they made $40,000 a year. They started at an average household income and in 40 years never got a raise. That's a loser. By definition. I mean, if you breathe in and out and show up, they'll give you a raise. Eventually. Just Charlie's still breathing. I just feel bad. You know? Eventually, you'll get a raise. Some of you think I've hyped this up or something. It's really got all kinds of conservative things built into it. What if you made a little bit more? You know what the numbers would do if you went from 12% instead got 15% on your mutual funds, which I've averaged for about the last 10 years? That little bitty difference makes the thing go bananas, and you wouldn't even believe it, so I'm not even going to talk about it. Because then I'll get letters. You can't get 15%. I mean, again, if I'm half wrong, the average American in North America can retire at least with dignity. At a minimum with dignity. And not be counting on social insecurity. Let's talk about it again. Let's review the baby steps. Baby step one. $1,000 in the bank. One more time. Baby step one is?
$1,000.
Baby step two is? Takes about a month for the first one. The second one takes an average of 18 to 24 months, year and a half to 2 years to be debt-free, everything but the house, gazelle intensity, paying off the smallest to the largest. Then finally get through that. I don't have any payments but a house payment. I could complete baby step three fairly quickly. Baby step three is?
3 to 6 months.
I got $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 sitting there just for emergencies, no payments but a house payment. Feels like financial peace. Now I've gone past crisis, and I'm ready to step over into wealth. And baby step four is 15% of your income. Baby step four is?